He may be the most understated Supreme Court justice in our lifetime. Influential, collegial, but very much under the radar in a court filled with big personalities. This week, Stephen Breyer announced his intention to retire at the end of the current term this summer. While honoring Justice Breyer for his decades of service to America, President Biden also made clear,
"The person I will nominate will be someone with extraordinary qualifications, character, experience, and integrity. And that person will be the first black woman ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court."
For a president used to dealing with a pandemic, inflation, and Russian troops on the border with Ukraine,
This is generally probably going to be good press for the president, for the Democrats, in contrast to some of the bad press that they've been getting the last little while. So maybe they'd actually not want to accelerate it unduly.
This week on 880 In Depth, a changing of the guard of the liberal wing of the U.S. Supreme Court, and a window into the high court as one of its most veteran justices steps down.
Of course people don't agree, but we have a country that is based on human rights, democracy, and so forth. But I'll tell you what Lincoln thought, what Washington thought, and what people today still think. It's an experiment.
Welcome to 880 In Depth. I'm Tim Scheld. By most accounts, Stephen Breyer informed the White House of his intention to retire days ago. And while it wasn't his plan, the news leaked out Thursday of this week, which required on Friday.
This is a CBS News special report. I'm Nora O'Donnell in Washington. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer will make his retirement plans official today at the White House ceremony, where President Biden will make a formal announcement. CBS News has learned that Breyer has formally handed the president his letter of resignation and will step down at the end of the court's current term this summer. There's that letter. Well, the 83-year-old Breyer was nominated to the nation's highest court by President Bill Clinton in 1994, and he has been a mainstay of the court's liberal wing. His retirement gives President Biden the chance to fulfill a campaign promise and appoint the first black female Supreme Court justice.
This announcement came, I think, earlier than Justice Breyer probably wanted. He told President Biden apparently last week and didn't necessarily want to make the announcement public so soon, but there was a leak.
Ilya Shapiro is vice president of the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute. He is also the author of Supreme Disorder, a book about power and politics and the Supreme Court. He spoke with our Peter Haskell.
Presumably he'll serve out the term, and so realistically the timeline is, you know, 5 months until the end of June, effectively. So there's no need to rush. And of course, the Democrats do have their slim majority in the Senate during this whole period. So I imagine that the president and his team will be interviewing candidates. Then there'll be an announcement of a nominee in a month or so, and we'll have the normal confirmation process.
Good afternoon. I begin by recognizing both Dr. Breyer, Dr. Biden, and for being here. And I can't tell you, this is sort of a bittersweet day for me. Justice Breyer and I go back a long way.
There's no rush to get someone confirmed, you know, before the election, say, as happened with Amy Coney Barrett, or any other timing issues like that. There's not, you know, currently a vacancy. Breyer is doing his job. He'll finish out the term. So I think they just we'll want to do it in kind of the normal course. It'll take, you know, in total, it could take, you know, 2 months or so, 3 months, but certainly there's plenty of time, and this is generally probably going to be good press for the president, for the Democrats, in contrast to some of the bad press that they've been getting the last little while. So maybe they'd actually not want to accelerate it unduly. The Republicans, there's not much they can do to stop it or to slow it down, you know, the various people that are being thrown around as a short list, you know, unless something unusual comes out about them, it's hard to see them being stopped.
Is there something the Republicans can do or would want to do to gum up the process or make this more difficult or muddy the waters or anything?
Probably not. The Democrats tried with the last several nominees, and obviously they were hugely controversial, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett, but control of the Senate, having a majority of the votes, is really the coin of the realm.
There was a report in Axios this morning. Basically, the Republicans would try to hurt Democratic senators who are up for election. Do you think that is something that might come into play and is feasible?
Judges and the Supreme Court have tended to be a winning issue for Republicans, and so certainly they'll run on, you know, what kind of justices do we want? Do we want Alito and Gorsuch and Thomas, or more like Sotomayor? It's hard to see any Democrats voting against the nominee, whoever it is.
From an outsider's perspective, it seems this whole nomination process is becoming more partisan. Is that necessarily the case?
That's probably right. We're at the culmination of several trends where divergent interpretive theories map onto partisan preferences at a time when the parties are more ideologically sorted than they've been since the Civil War. And so although the judges and justices do not act in a partisan manner, the sorts of judges and justices who are nominated certainly differ and align according to party.
Is that good or bad for the country?
It's not a good thing for the country, because judging and jurisprudence, the law, is supposed to be different than simply politics. But it's a symptom of larger issues. It's not something that's something that's wrong in the legal community or with candidates for the court.
How do we try to fix that? How do we try to make this less blatantly partisan?
I mean, the only way to do it is to have the stakes be lower. That is, for the Supreme Court to not to rule on so many of the major issues in American public life every year. Enforce federalism and separation of powers, so more decisions are taken at state and local levels and also by Congress rather than within the executive branch. Now, that's not an easy or an overnight or a simple solution, but ultimately that's the only way you're going to defuse these fights.
I'm here today to express the nation's gratitude to Justice Stephen Breyer for his remarkable career of public service and his clear-eyed commitment to making our country's laws work for its people.
For his part, President Biden made good on a promise he made during the presidential campaign.
Choosing someone to sit in the Supreme Court, I believe, is one of the most serious constitutional responsibilities a president has. Our process is going to be rigorous. I will select a nominee worthy of Justice Breyer's legacy of excellence and decency. While I've been studying candidates' backgrounds and writings, I've made no decision except one. The person I will nominate will be someone with extraordinary qualifications, character, experience, and integrity. And that person will be the first Black woman ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court. It's long overdue, in my view. I made that commitment during the campaign for president, and I will keep that commitment. I will fully do what I said I'd do. I will fulfill my duty to select a justice, not only with the Senate's consent, but with his advice. You've heard me say in other nomination processes that the Constitution says seek the advice and consent, but the advice as well of the Senate. I'm going to invite senators from both parties to offer their ideas and points of view. I'll also consult with leading scholars and lawyers. And I'm fortunate to have advising me in this selection process, Vice President Kamala Harris. She's an exceptional lawyer, former Attorney General of the state of California, former member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I will listen carefully to all the advice I'm given. and I'll study the records and former cases carefully. I'll meet with the potential nominees, and it is my intention to announce my decision before the end of February. I have made no choice at this point. Once I select a nominee, I'll ask the Senate to move promptly on my choice. In the end, I will nominate a historic candidate, someone who is worthy of Justice Breyer's legacy, and someone who, like Justice Breyer, will provide incredible service on the United States Supreme Court.
The president, during the campaign, said that he would nominate a black woman if he had a chance. Two things. Is it appropriate for him to telegraph like that? Is that a big deal? And is this a good thing to have a black woman on the high court?
I think it's unfortunate that he limited himself in those ways by those types of characteristics, eliminating very qualified jurists from day one because of their race and sex. It would be historic to have a black woman on the court, to be sure, and there are several qualified candidates for that role, but it would have been better, not to say ahead of time that I'm going to pick a black woman, and then, if one is picked, that would only enhance her stature if the selection process wasn't limited.
The Cato Institute's Ilya Shapiro.
Well, presumably his successor will be more liberal, more progressive, more on the left, which, marginally shifts the court, I suppose, on not necessarily in the vote count. The vote count will still be, what it is in any given case. But the quality and tenor of dissent, say, would probably be different. And as Justice Byron White used to say, every new justice makes for a new court. So even beyond what we see superficially with vote counts, the internal dynamic behind the scenes, I'm sure, will be changed. And, it depends. Different justices are more influential behind the scenes with their colleagues.
And how was Breyer? Was he more influential than your average justice, or pretty much the same? How do you see that?
I think he was well-liked. He is well-liked. He's pragmatic. He and Kagan famously came up with a compromise with Chief Justice Roberts over the Obamacare case a decade ago. He's thought of as an expert in administrative law and a nice man. Certainly didn't turn off colleagues like some historically justices have.
And what is his legacy on the high court?
He's a bit of a throwback. A man of his generation, steeped in the post-Watergate battles over law and politics, fairly deferential to government and to the administrative state. Doesn't have as high a profile as many of his colleagues. Doesn't write in a way that either wins applause or criticism necessarily. But his legacy is being kind of a solid judge, firmly on the left side of the court.
Breyer's public moment came this week at the White House as he stood with the president to announce the retirement.
Justice Breyer, on behalf of all the American people, I want to thank you and your family for your tremendous service to our nation. And I'm going to yield the floor to you, Mr. Justice.
Thank you, Mr. President. That is terribly nice. And believe me, I hold it right here. It's wonderful.
He referenced his love of speaking to students of all ages and shared thoughts about his time on the court and this time in the United States.
This is a complicated country. There are more than 330 million people. And my mother used to say it's every race, it's every religion, and she would emphasize this, and it's every point of view possible. And it's a kind of miracle. When you sit there and see all those people in front of you, people that are so different in what they think, and yet they've decided to help solve their major differences under law. And when the students get too cynical, I say, go look at what happens in countries that don't do that.
And that's there. I can't take this around in my job. But people have come to accept this Constitution, and they've come to accept the importance of a rule of law. And I want to make another point to them. I want to say, look, of course people don't agree, but we have a country that is based on human rights, democracy, and so forth. But I'll tell you what Lincoln thought, what Washington thought, and what people today still think. It's an experiment. It's an experiment. That's what they said. And Joanna paid each of our grandchildren a certain amount of money to memorize the Gettysburg Address. And the reason that what we want them to pick up there, and what I want those students to pick up, if I can remember the first two lines, is that four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought up, created upon this here a new country, a country that was dedicated to liberty and the proposition that all men are created equal. Conceived in liberty, those are his words, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. He meant women, too. And we are now engaged in a great civil war to determine whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. See, those are the words I want to see, an experiment. And that's what he thought. It's an experiment. And I found some letters that George Washington wrote where he said the same thing. It's an experiment. That experiment existed then because even the liberals in Europe, you know, they're looking over here and they're saying it's a great idea in principle, but it'll never work. But we'll show them it does. That's what Washington thought. And that's what Lincoln thought. And that's what people still think today. And I say, well, I want you, and I'm talking to the students now. I say, I want you to pick just this up. It's an experiment that's still going on. And I'll tell you something. You know who will see whether that experiment works? It's you, my friend. It's you, Mr. High School student. It's you, Mr. College student. It's you, Mr. Law School students. It's us, but it's you. It's that next generation. And the one after that. My grandchildren and their children. They'll determine whether the experiment still works. And of course, I am an optimist, and I'm pretty sure it will. Does it surprise you that that's the thought that comes into my mind today? I don't know, but thank you.
Longtime court watcher, CBS correspondent Jan Crawford.
That speech, I mean, that was classic Stephen Breyer. And we talk about his many lifetime of public service, but that right there is another public service he provides. He goes out and talks to school groups, legal organizations, colleges, universities about the importance of the rule of law and looking to law to really work through our many differences. As President Biden pointed out, you know, he was a model of civility at a time of great division. And obviously, there is great division on the United States Supreme Court, and there has been since Breyer joined that court. But what he has done for that court is try to bridge some of that division. He's known for, you know, kind of walking down the hall and popping his head in the justices' chambers to hash through a case. The other justices don't do that. He has warm, friendly relationships with all of them. He is well-liked, he's engaged, and he had a tremendous impact on that court, not only for his writings and his opinions, but his willingness to listen and engage with his colleagues. Mm-hmm.
As for who might take his place and how that process will likely go for President Biden, here's CBS's Ed O'Keefe.
Got to keep in mind, too, the fact that he reminded us that he's known Justice Breyer since the 1970s. This is a president who campaigned on his foreign policy experience. One could argue, though, he has far more experience in what he's about to launch into, and that is selecting a federal judge to sit, or somebody to sit on the Supreme Court. Since the 1970s when he joined the Senate, all the way through 2009 when he resigned, every federal judge or Supreme Court justice who was nominated by a president would have passed over Senator Biden's desk. And for 8 years as vice president, he was intimately involved in the process with Barack Obama. So this is somebody who knows what he's looking for, knows the questions to ask, and is going to relish this opportunity. And the idea that he's going to bring in the opinions of his fellow former senators, Senate colleagues, we'll see about that. There has been signals from Republicans that they're not really interested in engaging in this. Lindsey Graham saying that as long as all 50 Democratic senators and the vice president are on board, they don't need Republicans. Let's see if the olive branch is accepted by Republicans and they weigh in and the president listens to them. But we know that there are a handful of names under consideration. Jan mentioned Justice Jackson, who sits here in Washington. Certainly Judge Childs from South Carolina is a sentimental favorite of Jim Clyburn. Leandra Kruger has connections to Vice President Harris because as Attorney General of California, the Vice President put Justice Kruger on the High Court of the Golden State, and Candace Jackson Akawumi, another recently confirmed justice to the Court of Appeals in Chicago, is another name to watch as well. The fact that they have been vetted recently by this White House, that the president is more recently familiar with their experience, certainly will be a benefit. But given what he said today, it looks like he may be casting a wide net and is willing to listen to just about anyone.
By the way, after Justice Breyer made his inspiring remarks about Lincoln's Gettysburg Address,
I don't know that you've ever been to the White House in the Lincoln bedroom, but I invite both of you to come and stay. The Lincoln bedroom has, against the wall between the windows looking out, a handwritten copy of the Gettysburg Address written by Lincoln. In that bedroom, allegedly, in the sitting room. And so you got to come and see it. And even if you can't come and stay, bring your grandchildren so they can see it as well. Thank you all so very, very much for being here. And I'm not going to take any questions because I think it's inappropriate to take questions with the justice here. He's still sitting on the bench. And I'm going to give you the mask back. And, but you'll have plenty of opportunities to get me later today and for the rest of the week. Next week, too. So, thank you very much. Thank you.
In Depth is a production of WCBS News Radio 880. Peter Haskell and myself, Tim Scheld, are the executive producers. Subscribe to the podcast to listen to us each week on your time. Look for 880 In Depth wherever you get your audio. Thank you for listening, and please be safe.